Hello and welcome to your free therapy session. My name is Violet.
And my name is Halle. This is Therapy Hour.
Because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminan-speaking Musqueam peoples. Before we get into this week's episode, I just want to give a huge thank you to everyone who listened to our last show, our pilot episode. We got so many listeners and so much positive feedback, and it really meant so much to us.
It really did. I was weirdly surprised. Like, I knew people knew about it. I knew I was talking about it, but getting people that I didn't even talk specifically to about it coming back and just at random points stopping us at Boulevard, at parties, being like, we love it. It looks so good. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you listened to it.
It was so sweet. We got a lot of positive feedback. We hope that we have enticed you to listen again this week.
Yes.
But we just didn't want to go on without thanking everyone for taking the time to listen. It really means a lot to us.
Big hugs to everyone. So, this week on Therapy Hour, we're going to be talking about attachment styles. Very exciting. I just wanted to put a quick content warning. We are going to be talking about childhood times, and it does include some mentions of childhood abuse, maybe just hard to listen to if you're struggling a little bit with your inner child. So just so you know, that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, just some sensitive content there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have learned so much more about attachment styles just through being your friend, because I feel like you have such a good understanding of the different types of attachment styles and the way that that impacts people and their relationships. And I know that it's really helped you to learn more about your attachment style. And that's very inspiring to me.
That's really lovely to hear. Yeah, I remember learning about attachment styles from a friend and being so relieved to know that there's a reason why I do the things that I do. And I think that the conversations I've had about it with other people have been really productive. And I'm really excited to share some of this information because I'm hoping that anyone that doesn't know about attachment styles can maybe start to reflect and feel somewhat seen. And people even that do know about attachment styles get to hear us talk about it, maybe give a new perspective. And it was really nice to like be able to learn that about myself and grow knowing the ways that I respond to things like that.
Yeah, I know for me, it's been particularly helpful to understand more about attachment styles just to help some of the relationships in my life and to better understand the people in my life's preferences of communication or closeness or distance.
Yeah.
And learning to kind of look outside of myself a little bit and understanding, you know, how to meet the needs of the people in my life a bit better.
Yeah, I think once you learn more about it, you can start to look at yourself, but you also can look at other people and kind of give reason for their actions, which is really beneficial, I think, to any relationship, romantic or just a friendship. I do want to remind everyone, including myself and Violet throughout this conversation, is that psychology research is incredibly categorical, but we are not one-dimensional humans. Just because you act in certain ways that maybe exhibit a certain type of characteristic, it doesn't mean it's the only way that you are. And it also doesn't mean that you're in the most extreme level of it. And I think that that's kind of what we're going to get into throughout this episode, where we will be talking about characteristics of certain attachment styles, and you may relate to some of those and you may not, and that's fine. I think that it's just important to know that your life as a human is on a spectrum. There are going to be times where you feel certain ways and there are going to be other times where you don't, or there are going to be times where definitions do define you and there are going to be times when they don't fit you very often, and all of that is okay.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's a really good reminder that as much as we love to put ourselves in boxes to some extent and have these categories that we can identify with, it's also really important to know that we are all well-rounded people with lots of nuance and complexity to us. And I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind as we learn a bit more about attachment styles this week. Well, I know that you're all dying to hear what our attachment styles are.
Well, you're going to have to wait. You're going to have to listen to the whole episode. You're going to have to listen to us, get into it, and then we will finally reveal. As always, in this fun little podcast that we do, we have a little song excerpt. And this week, we are going to be listening to Irish Exit by Eliza Lamb. Eliza Lamb is a part of a great podcast with this other girl, Julia Hava, Benchtopia. I recommend it to everyone. They talk about such amazing topics. But Eliza Lamb has a, what she describes, avoidant attachment, but more so on the, like, dismissing side, I believe. And they've done episodes about attachment styles, and she wrote this song about her avoidant attachment. So you're listening to Therapy Hour. We'll be right back.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again.
Welcome back. You're listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Holly.
And I'm Violet. We've reached the research component of our show. So do you want to tell me a little bit more about the origin of attachment styles?
Yeah. So the original attachment style happened decades ago, and it was by this British psychiatrist named John Bowlby. And his research was mainly to understand the distress experienced by infants when they are separated from their families. He started to realize in his observations that things like crying and screaming were responses of the child to neglect. And he writes a lot about how infants are like other mammals, where when they're born, they have no capacity really to fend for themselves, and they need to have a caregiver there. So he wrote about this thing called the attachment behavioral system, which we don't really need to get into, but he started these ideas of like anxious and secure and avoidant. And down the line in the 80s, more researchers were observing how infants that exhibited certain traits also carried that to their later lives. So then there was more characterization on the anxiety, the avoidance, and then possibly situations where they were secure. And now with more research, there's a better definition of like a few more distinctions.
Okay, so how has the research into attachment styles changed more recently since John Bowlby's discoveries?
Yeah, now attachment styles more seen from an adult perspective. It's how we respond in our intimate relationships, whether that's romantic or that's platonic. And it's based on how our needs were met as children, whether us as infants perceived our needs being met or not being met. And this episode, we're going to be talking about four attachment styles, because that is usually now the standard of measure. So there is secure, preoccupied, dismissing, and fearful. And it's on a spectrum of avoidance and anxiety.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So do you want to start us off with just telling a little bit more about what a secure attachment is?
Yeah. So secure adults are ones that have a very equal balance between independence and dependence. They're a lot more able to give and respond to intimacy while also being able to be by themselves and depend on themselves. So it's a very equal balance. They tend to be quite low on anxiety and avoidance. They tend to not have any fear of intimacy. They don't really have any abandonment issues. This doesn't mean that their childhood was perfect. It just more means that their needs were met in a somewhat healthy way. So the child tends to feel very safe during their upbringing. Their parent is able to respond very adequately in times of need. And the child overall feels very understood by the parent. Mm-hmm. So they don't feel as if their parent is neglecting them, and that when they feel distressed, the parent is responding in a way that the child at that moment needs. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're also supported by their parent to move forward and not depend on them as much. So they're not really coddled, but they're given that attention and then pushed to start making their own healthy coping mechanisms.
Oh, that's a really interesting aspect of it. I'm wondering, you know, we talk a lot about childhood being a really important part of developing that attachment style and, mm-hmm. and figuring out how your needs are being met by your caretakers. Is there a window of time that you know of that this is really formative? And like, is there kind of an age where this sort of stops, I don't know, impacting it?
When I was doing some research, the term or the time frame of 18 months was given a lot. So it's very, very
wow.
early. Like, it's when you are crying, like you're a child, your parent is just like, I don't know what you want. You have no words to express what you want. I'm sure that there is also differences when you come out of infancy and you're mm-hmm. more just maybe in your first few years of life. But 0 to 18 months, I think, is usually the time frame.
Wow, that's really young.
A lot of pressure to put on the parent.
Cool. So can I throw a little scenario at you and then you respond with how you think a securely attached person might respond?
Yes, go ahead.
Cool. So say a secure person is in a relationship and their partner has asked them for some space. How might someone with a secure attachment respond to something like that?
Yeah, so in most cases, someone who is secure, whether they have higher ranges of anxiety or not, I think the main response is understanding and also the desire to give their partner that space. Securely attached people tend to have a pretty good like self-concept, and they aren't as insecure as other people are. So when someone, and maybe if a close partner was to say, hey, like, I'm going through a little bit of a rough time, I think I need to take a few days to just like accept that and maybe work on it a little bit, or work on it with some other people or my friends, a securely attached person maybe could feel a little bit of anxiety or feel worried for their partner, but ultimately is secure enough to be like, you can go and do that. I will let you do that. Mm-hmm. And I would like to check in. They're really good at communicating, you know, what do you want from me in this? Like, do you want me to call you in a few days? Do you want me to just wait for you to come to me? Mm-hmm. And when the other person tells them that, they're very accepting of it. So mm-hmm. just have a very level head usually about those types of interactions.
Right. Like tending not to bring their own insecurities into a situation like that and being really confident in negotiating boundaries and discussing that mm-hmm. and communicating about that.
Yeah, just they were raised feeling very good about communication with someone who's close to them. And again, feeling very secure in themselves and therefore being able to be secure with the people that are closest to them.
Cool. So shall we move on to preoccupied attachment?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, let me hear a little bit about that.
So preoccupied people are the anxious folks, the very, very anxious folks. And to give a little bit of background to all the other attachment styles that aren't secure have forms of anxiety, but preoccupied is the kind of variation of the originally anxiously attached person. So preoccupied people are incredibly dependent on their partner for lots of things. And then not getting the validation or attention from their partner, along with the thought of them not being their partner anymore, gives them a lot of anxiety. So they're in need of consistent appraisal, consistent support. They really seek acceptance from their partners. And that usually comes from a very low self-concept. They don't have the best security levels in themselves. Mm-hmm. They tend to have quite a negative self-image, but they look at their partner to rebuild that for them.
So is that kind of coming from a place in their infancy where they may not have gotten the attention and approval from their caretakers?
Yeah, there's variance in the preoccupied person. They were raised with a lot of inconsistency. So that child may have not had their needs met at some points, but then also at other times were given a lot of that support.
Okay.
So the parent could, like, at certain points give their child a lot of attention and just, you know, really be all over them. Like, if they're crying, they're cuddling them, they're holding them close. But then in other times, they are just letting them be. So it's kind of putting this child in a place of being like, when am I going to get this again?
Right.
And feeling confused and feeling very inconsistent with their, like, closest person at the time, which kind of then translates
and
to
also knowing what that attention looks like and feels like and knowing that it's possible to receive it.
Yes.
But for whatever reason, and like trying to put together the pieces of why am I receiving it now and not at this other time?
Yeah. And then they start to learn how to get that attention. So there could be times where, you know, the child is maybe whimpering and the parent isn't giving them that attention, but they know from the last time when they cried, they will then really ask for that attention. So they'll start screaming. And that's really important to know then in their adulthood, because when preoccupied people don't get that attention, they are very active in asking for it.
But it sounds like they're very willing to express their needs and ask for some kind of reciprocation if they don't feel as though they're receiving it.
Yeah, and they're really good just about being dependent on someone, and they're great in intimate interactions. Like, people who are anxiously attached or preoccupied, I've seen that they do love, and they do love being in relationships. And that in itself is a huge benefit to be looking at as well.
So let me throw another scenario at you.
Okay.
In a situation where a preoccupied person goes on a few dates with someone and they want to make it official, mm-hmm. how might they go about that?
Yeah, this is a really interesting scenario to think about, because a preoccupied person, they want definitive answers. And that's in a lot of ways. I mean, I look at that and I'm like, that's great. That's a great thing to do. But something that both you and I were talking about earlier is kind of how that may be mismatched in some of the new ways of dating, kind of with hookup culture and casual dating. So in this scenario, assuming that that's kind of the realm of dating that we have now, after a few dates, this preoccupied person may be posing a lot of questions to their partner, being like, what is this? Where do you want this to go? Do you want to be in a relationship with me? There's a lot of dependence right now in the unknowing of hookup culture. So
sure.
You start seeing someone, it starts kind of going somewhere, and there's like this dance around like who's going to say something first. The preoccupied person most likely will be the first person to say that. So They will.
I think there's nothing wrong with asking, obviously,
no. But
I think it can give some preoccupied people kind of the ring around just because other people may not be willing or ready to have those conversations,
Especially
if it's quite early when it's kind of being demanded of them. And I think it's also okay to kind of be figuring it out on your own end.
Exactly.
And not able to give that person an answer just yet of what it is you are looking for. And of course, communicating that is going to be important on either end.
Right.
But I can imagine how that could be really difficult, especially as you were saying, in this hookup culture that we are living in currently. Cool. Let's move on to dismissing attachment. What does it mean to have a dismissing attachment?
So dismissing people are the classic, quote unquote, emotionally unavailable folks. Again, toxic language, but we hope that it gives people some understanding.
Sure.
But yeah, dismissing people are very independent. They really like supporting themselves. And they don't really look for a partner to do that. If anything, there are times where dismissing people would rather be by themselves because they feel as if having a partner may hinder their ability to support themselves. They're very independent, like I said before. They don't always interact in like strong emotional bonds with other people. They may struggle a little bit with that. They enjoy to process alone. They enjoy, you know, dealing with things on their own time rather than maybe going to other people for that, which, you know, we're talking about good, bad, and evil and all this. I think that there is a lot of value in being independent and on your own and being able to deal with your things alone. Conversely, though, I think that some of the issues that dismissing people come towards is when they are struggling and they may not be able to support themselves and they have quite a low capacity to even ask for help or even ask to talk to someone, like in the most extreme sense.
Yeah, and as important as it is to be able to depend on yourself and be independent, it is also extremely useful to know how to ask for help when you need it, because at the end of the day, as much as maybe some of us would like to be our own support system, it's
right.
just not the reality. So that sounds like a challenge for people with a dismissing attachment.
Absolutely.
So what might a childhood of someone with a dismissing attachment look like?
Yeah, they didn't get that much support from their family. Their caregivers most likely enforced a lot of independence at a very, very young age. They tended to encourage their child to kind of fend for themselves, to make themselves feel better in times of distress. This can come from, you know, a parent that's just busy, along with a parent that just may not know how to be a parent. Because of, you know, this very large push to be an independent child, this kind of then leads to a lot of this development of coping mechanisms from a very young age. And again, you know, when you're a child, you're looking at the person that's closest to you. You're looking at your parent or your caregiver, whoever's, you know, giving that support at that time to be like, what do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
And so if the parent turns around and says, figure it out, of course, they're going to figure it out. And then, you know, growing up, then they're going to want to just deal with it on their own because the closest person to them at birth said for them to do that.
Right. Yeah. And of course, that's going to be a pattern that kind of follows you for a lot of your adult life. And just realizing, you know, I am my number one support system. My
mm-hmm.
caregiver at a very young age made that very clear to me that I am to be my one and only support system.
Yeah.
So I can absolutely understand how that would become kind of a learned behavior and into adulthood.
Exactly.
Should I throw another little scenario at
Let's
you?
Let's do it.
Cool. So a dismissive person's partner has just flirted with someone else in front of them.
Oh, no.
Dun, dun, dun. And that has naturally upset the dismissive person. So how might they respond to that?
Yeah. So this is a really great reminder that, again, a dismissive attachment, even though it's characterized with avoidance, is still anxious. So they see that, and it's, let's say in this case, it has upset them, but they don't really know how to deal with it. So again, I think that that dismissive person in this scenario is really, again, going to go in on themselves, because they may go off and just think about it for themselves. They've learned to deal with a lot of their issues on their own. So they're probably just going to go off and try to deal with that themselves. They may not even bring it up with their partner. Mm-hmm. They may just use terms like, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Everything's okay. Like, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that avoidance could come off, I guess, in some ways as like being a bit passive aggressive, being a bit emotionally removed. But it is coming from this place of like, I don't know how else to communicate to this person. I wasn't given that.
Right. When you kind of look at the core of it, you can really understand, you know, why someone with a dismissing attachment would respond in such a way of not confronting their partner or close friend about a particular situation that they're upset about, because maybe they don't know how that person will respond and they'd rather just deal with it on their own because they know that they can do that.
Exactly.
And they, you know, maybe to some capacity have been successful for doing that for themselves mm-hmm. for a very long time, and that's what they've learned. And if it's not broke, don't fix it.
I know.
Cool. So we're getting to our last attachment style here. So let's go over what it means to have a fearful attachment.
So fearful attachment is the rarest attachment style. It's the more newer one. So with preoccupied and dismissing, those are just variations kind of what we used to characterize anxious and avoidant.
Okay.
So in the way that like secure attachment, I don't know if anyone else has felt this way while we're listening, but secure attachment kind of takes, in my eyes, two very good parts of preoccupied and dismissing, to the independence and the dependence. Fearful attachment does that same thing, but in a bit of a more maladaptive way. So someone who is fearfully attached both has immense anxiety along with a lot of avoidance. So they want to have intimate interactions with people. They want that emotional support. And in many ways, that could really benefit them. However, they are really afraid to ask for that attention. They experience quite a bit of trust issues with their partners, but they can also build up this resentment towards people close to them because they want that interaction. They want that intimacy and they desire that. But it really scares them to be able to be open to their partners mm-hmm. or the people close to them, because for them, that intimacy, as desirable as it is not something that they experienced a lot growing up.
Why do you think it was important for the kind of world and research of psychology to add in this new attachment style that wasn't really previously recognized?
Well, I think that a lot of it can come from the fact that there are people who didn't feel, I guess, seen by that attachment. This is all my own opinion as well.
Yeah,
I don't really know. But I think also, like, it brings a lot of nuance, because what is lost in those other attachment styles, especially when talking about childhood, is what fearfully attached children, like, experience growing up. Because fearfully attached kids had very, very turbulent upbringings. Mm. Their parents would sometimes give them a lot of support, again, kind of in the way of preoccupied. But then otherwise, it could just be outbursts. It could be erratic behavior. The child has learned that they are not always safe in their interactions with people they are supposed to be closest to. They are consistently anxious around their caregivers because their caregivers are too unpredictable. They can't learn what to do.
Right.
And also they're a kid, right? They're literally infants. And like even then they're trying to kind of conceptualize what's going on in the world. But because their families are being so inconsistent with
yeah.
like sometimes we're going to be very nice to you. Sometimes we may ignore you, but sometimes I'm going to just blow up. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these parents tend to be, maybe they don't have a lot of security in their parenting styles. That's one option. But also sometimes they're just not good parents.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing, kind of connecting it to the previous attachment styles that we've heard, is while a dismissive person might go off and kind of deal with their issues themselves, while on the surface, a fearfully attached person might do something very similar, mm-hmm. it's not coming from this place of, I am my own support system necessarily. It's more so coming from a place of fear of, I'm actually terrified of the way that this person will react if I tell them that I'm upset.
Yeah.
So I absolutely can't do that, and I'm going to run in the other direction.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of fearful people have some aspects. They have both aspects of, like, dismissive people and preoccupied people. So fearful people can be very independent. But again, they crave that intimacy a lot more than dismissive people do.
Interesting.
Dismissive people tend to not want that emotional attachment all the time. That's not for every dismissive person. Sure. It might just be in the ways in which they're reacting to certain situations. But most likely, dismissive people just really haven't been shown that support. So in many ways, they just may not know what that even looks like. Whereas fearfully attached people do know that what that support looks like, but they know it at a really, really large cost. And I think that it reminds me a lot of kind of how we talk about some like toxic relationships sometimes, of like you have these lows in your relationship, but then you get one really, really good thing.
Right.
And then you are chasing that feeling forever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very real thing, you know, having the highs and lows, the peaks and valleys in a relationship, be it a relationship with a romantic partner or your parents. I mean,
yeah.
That really can create a dynamic that is extremely toxic and extremely painful.
Yeah, I think that it is common with people who are fearfully attached to either be the victims of some form of like verbal or physical abuse, or they were experiencing it in another way. They might have seen their parents do that. And that's a lot to take in as a child. It's a lot to process. And then to learn that from such a young age and then go on in your life to be like, okay, well, if this is what intimate interaction is, like, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the best thing to also remind listeners is that you didn't choose your parents. You did not choose who raised you. So again, I know that it can be hard sometimes to do some reflection of the past, but it can make you much stronger. And I know that in my reflection, as difficult as it has been sometimes, it gives you a lot of light, I think, at the end of the day. Like, I think not forgiving your family, but giving reason sometimes for these interactions. And because if you don't like your family, or if you see some negativity within like the way you were raised, then if you look at yourself, you are a product of that, unfortunately. So, well, fortunately sometimes. Maybe that's a bit of my own stuff.
You're projecting.
I'm projecting a little bit. But, you know, you're a product of that, good or bad, and you didn't have control over it. So at least if you have some reasoning, you can do some characterizing and some deep thought. And then hopefully that gives some light to people who may not have enjoyed growing up in the ways that they did.
So we went over kind of the childhood aspects of where fearful attachment might come from.
Mm-hmm.
Let me throw one last scenario at you.
Yes, yes.
So we can get a good idea of maybe some of the patterns and reactions that a fearfully attached person might have. So what might happen if a partner says that they need to talk to a fearfully attached person once they get home? How might that feel? How might they react?
Yeah. Most likely, the fearfully attached person is on red alert.
Sure.
They are nervous. They are scared. I think for a lot of fearfully attached people, confrontation is not fun.
Not their friend.
Not their friend. And this can happen, I think, in a lot of different ways as well for other types of people. But I think specifically in the realm of fearfully attached people that we're kind of looking at right now, for them, you know, confrontation was not good. Confrontation was scary. And confrontation, at the very least, meant some argument, some fight, maybe some shouting, maybe other things. And so when their partner says that to them, they are just trying to ease the situation. A lot of the times they're like trying to send them compliments. Maybe they're going to cook them dinner. A lot of fearfully attached people will just try to get out of the confrontation altogether.
Oh, okay.
So just being like, oh, I actually have this, this, and this to go to, and then I need to do this other thing, and they just try to push it off. Yeah, I'm busy. I can't talk. It can come off sometimes as avoidance, like they're just trying to avoid the problem. But it is coming from this like deeply rooted anxiety of like what that confrontation is. And it's also good to add to that they are also not good at confronting others, because most likely people who are fearfully attached weren't even given a say growing up. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't get to sit their parents down and say, oh, like this thing upset me. It probably wasn't even a conversation. So for them, they don't really value their ideas of confrontation. So they're not able to confront anyone. Then they don't want to be confronted because confrontation is bad. And in their eyes, they are like, I'm just going to do everything I can to get out of this.
Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So we've talked a lot about, you know, I'm kind of giving you these scenarios so that we can get a better sense of how this might manifest in relationships. But obviously, the scenarios that I've given, we've really just focused on one partner and how they're responding and reacting. Mm-hmm. And we're not really thinking so much the fact that there are two people, yes, or maybe more in a partnership.
Who knows? That's for another episode.
Yeah, we'll get into that later. But those people are both coming with their unique attachment styles. So I'm wondering, for a healthy relationship, do you need to have the same attachment style?
Not necessarily. The research answer is that people who are securely attached tend to be the best partners. This is because they can be independent, they can be by themselves, they're also great at confrontation normally, they can listen very well, they can support their partners when they want it, and they can also be supported.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's obviously going to be a lot easier for a securely attached person to help their partner through their anxieties when they're not necessarily having those intense anxieties themselves.
Exactly. But to add, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that all the other attachment styles are just doomed for any healthy relationship. They just have to be able to communicate their responses to each other. So if we were to take something, someone that was preoccupied and someone that was dismissive, in some ways, they are polar opposites. One needs a lot of attention, but the other one wants to, you know, keep their independence. But if they respond to each other, like in their own capacity, they can actually really make the relationship work and probably help each other. Like, let's say the dismissive person is thinking, okay, well, I have a hard time spending like every hour of the day with you, and I would like to have some of my own alone time. So when I go to my room, or, you know, let's say in this situation, they're sharing a home together. Mm-hmm. When I go to my room, I'm going to be asking a little bit for me time, and then I will come outside and let you know. Because for the anxious person, someone just moving to another room might, you know, make them think, oh no, like what are they getting upset at? But if they get to this common space of like, I'm going to ask for my space still, but I can try to let you know when I want that. The preoccupied person can respond of like, okay, now that I know that this is what you want, maybe I don't need this support all the time, but I'm just going to have you let me know when you want that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, obviously communicating needs and boundaries and understanding that whether you're the same attachment style or different attachment styles, those boundaries might look a bit different depending on your preferences.
Exactly.
And so just airing it out. I think relationships take work no matter what attachment style you have.
Exactly.
And if both partners are willing to show up with transparency, it can be really healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that there are times when that doesn't work so well.
Yeah. I think if you have people who are, let's go back to the preoccupied and dismissing example. If you have someone that's extremely preoccupied and another person who's extremely dismissive, they may just not really get along. You know, the dismissive person may want their alone time. And if the preoccupied person doesn't get their attention, they might feel upset with them.
Yeah, it sounds like if one person is having their needs fulfilled, the other person may not feel like their needs are being fulfilled. And
exactly.
Obviously that's not going to work out for anyone. So do you think that everyone just wants to be securely attached?
Maybe everyone might want to. You know, attachment security does predict longevity and healthiness of adult relationships, but attachment security doesn't always mean secure attachment. Studies do show that, like, communicating and troubleshooting your relationship and your attachment style along with your relationship with your partner can lead to attachment security. So you don't have to be secure to achieve that. And most likely, in the research that I've done, you can't really change your attachment style.
Okay, so you are just stuck with the attachment style that you kind of developed very early on in life.
In a way, like, I think that you can change in terms of how intense your attachment style presents itself. Most likely, this is at your very, very formative years. So, yes, you are kind of stuck with your attachment style. There are studies that show that within, like, good and healthy relationships, security does change over time, especially if the relationship is healthy. Security can increase a lot because of, like, healthy communication, just talking about what's going on in your life. But you can't do a 180. You can't be securely attached, because securely attached, by definition, is someone that was raised in a certain way. You can just learn to live and communicate with your attachment style.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we will get into a little bit more about the ways that you can navigate your attachment style and best communicate your needs after a few short ads. So don't go anywhere. And also, when we come back, we will be revealing our attachment style, so you won't want to miss that. We'll be right back.
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has an naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
Learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
And we're back. You're listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM.
It's been really interesting to learn more about the details of each of the respective attachment styles, because I think it can only benefit ourselves and our close relationships to be more aware about the way that they impact us. I think knowing your own attachment style as well as the attachment styles of the people closest to you is really, really helpful in communicating, airing out anxieties, and just making sure that you're fulfilling the needs of your partners or close friends. And while it's not something you can necessarily change about yourself, it's really good to know how to best deal with those issues that might be popping up for you.
I think it's extremely important to know how you respond to intimate relationships. I think that learning not only in yourself, but also the people around you can really make you more sympathetic to people.
Yeah, I think figuring out what your attachment style is kind of the first step to addressing the ways that it might be negatively impacting your life,
mm-hmm.
And maybe taking responsibility for some of those actions that you may have done that have hurt someone close to you.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say too, like, you know, we've talked a lot throughout this episode about the negative aspects of some of these attachment styles, but there are also some great aspects that I do not want to overlook.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of really good aspects of some of the non-secure attachment styles that you mentioned, like the ability to be independent or dependent, depending on how you're looking at it, or the confidence in confrontational situations. fearful, preoccupied, and dismissing attachment styles are not inherently bad by any means. They are ultimately just descriptors. Mm-hmm. And obviously, our attachment styles are kind of bestowed upon us as kids, and you can't choose your caretakers, as you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So it may feel really unfair. But again, there's no inherently bad attachment style, and that's really important mm-hmm. to stress. And you shouldn't strive to be securely attached because you most likely can't become fully secure. So you just have to learn how to best deal with your attachment. And you can do that through communication, as we've mentioned, or a little bit of trial and error, and also a heck of a lot of forgiveness from your yeah. partners and close friends while you're figuring that out. That's
for sure. And forgiveness of yourself.
Yeah.
Like, don't, I really stress to people to not beat themselves up over every bad thing that they might have done in terms of their attachment to others, because everyone is learning. I mean, you and I are only in our 20s. We're constantly learning what works for us and what works for others. And like you were saying, like, there are some really beneficial parts of some of those attachment styles. Obviously, there's extremes and there's ways in which it can negatively affect yourself and the people around you. But being independent is great. Being able to accept intimacy is great. Being a little cautious of your relationships and what you're getting into is great.
Before we reveal our own attachment styles, I'm mm-hmm. wondering if you believe that your attachment style is something that you can kind of like self-diagnose for yourself.
Well, seeing as we're doing it. Well, no, I think that attachment style is not a disorder. You can't self-diagnose a disorder or a mental issue, because that is up to a professional. Attachment style is not one of those things.
Right.
It is something that you can look within yourself and you can assess the situation. There's plenty of online tests. Not all of them are accurate.
Sure.
We will be sharing one that you can do on your own time. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, of course, you can do your own reflection. You can think about your childhood if you feel up to it. I would go as far to say, like, don't belittle yourself for whatever comes out of these tests. Like, you are still a human. You're functioning. Just having one title is not going to define you for the entirety of your life, or it's going to define every relationship. If you're thinking about it critically and you're going into relationships with an open mind and wanting to learn and wanting to grow with whoever you're doing it with, you'll be great. And yes, you can look, you can define your own attachment style is my main answer.
Yeah, I think all it really takes is a bit of honesty with yourself mm-hmm. and a little bit of self-reflection about perhaps your upbringing and also maybe just your relationships as they exist today. And I think that can really get you on the right path to figuring out what your attachment style might be.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like most of the people in my life who have taken a really strong interest in figuring out their attachment style have been friends who have observed their responses in relationships and are looking to figure out what that might mean about themselves rather than looking for an excuse for that behavior.
Yeah, I think a lot of people tend to just be looking for some clarity on the situation rather than being like, I need to know this attachment style, so now the next time someone says that I did something bad to them, I can blame it on that.
Yeah, I can be like, I'm dismissive.
Sorry, I'm dismissive.
There's nothing I can do about it. Shall we get to the very exciting portion of the show where we reveal our attachment styles? I know you've all been waiting for it.
Just biting your nails, grinding your teeth, just what are they? As if I feel like a lot of people that are listening to this have probably heard at least me talk about my attachment style.
Very possibly.
Yeah.
Well, I have taken the quiz. Yes. I've taken it a couple of times, but I took it again more recently just to make sure, you know, yeah. nothing changed, even though we went over how they can't really change.
Right.
So my attachment style is secure.
Mm-hmm. Damn right it is.
And, you know, I took the quiz. I got secure. And while that's pretty accurate, I think, with how I conduct my relationships, it certainly doesn't mean it's always easy, peasy, lemon squeezy for me to communicate exactly what I need. I think it has also really depended on some of the relationships I've been in the past where mm-hmm. my anxiety has been higher or lower depending on my partner in that relationship.
Oh.
And also, you know, my romantic relationships and the ways that I feel about confrontation or communication actually look really different from how that exists for me in my platonic relationships.
Yeah. Do you have any reasons in your mind that you think that is?
That's actually a great question. I don't know. I think maybe it's less to do with my inherent attachment style and more just my learned and lived experience as I've gone through my life. I think that confrontation isn't inherently the most comfortable thing for me.
Yeah.
And I think I've had a lot more positive experiences with it in my romantic partners than I have in my platonic relationships, which is really interesting because I know a lot of people feel just the opposite. But I think I feel as though when I'm in a monogamous relationship with someone or even something a little bit less serious, I feel entitled to communication and, you know, conversations about what's going on and hearing out from their end of things as well. And I don't feel super fearful when they come to me with confrontation. And I feel quite secure about it. And I am quite good about giving or getting closure, which I feel like is a big part of my attachment style.
Yeah.
In contrast to some of my friendships, where I think in the past, it just hasn't felt as comfortable for whatever reason.
I think that it's, you and I have talked about that before, and it's a very interesting aspect because, like, you are a very secure person, especially in your relationships. And I definitely hear you, not, again, not to belittle the fact that you have worked hard and done your own amount of, like, good and struggling within your relationships, but you have a pretty secure idea of, like, this is my relationship, this is the way that I'm going to act in it. But we have talked a lot about how that doesn't always translate to your friendships. And that's really interesting. Like, I wouldn't have ever really thought about it until you kind of talked about it with me. And I was like, oh, like, of course, there's experiences that you can hold that, again, you've been, like, positively reinforced in your romantic relationship. So, of course, you're going to, like, keep that up. And maybe if those responses weren't as positive in your friendships, you can learn to a certain extent, like, I don't know if I want to do this again because the last time I did this, it didn't make me feel very comfortable.
It's discouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not secure. I have a fearful attachment from the test. I'm in the 99th percentile of avoidance. So that's very fun. I've tested a few times. Sometimes I'm more fearful. Sometimes I get dismissive. But I do really connect with the fearfully attached portion because I think that for me, I do crave a lot of that closeness. There was definitely times in my life when I was younger that I just had no concept and no desire to, like, get close to anyone in my life. Whereas, like, the older I've gotten, the more I've wanted to do that, but also have struggled a lot more with being able to communicate that all the time. There are parts of fearfulness that I am, you know, okay with. I think that, like, definitely the independence is something that I really enjoy and I've talked a lot about with the people around me, that I do depend on myself quite a bit. And I think that was influenced by things that happened to me when I was very young. And that feels comforting because I know that I'm always going to have myself. And there may be people in the world that are not always going to be there, but I do know that I'm going to always be there. And that, and again, like, knowing people in my life who do struggle with independence sometime, it does make me feel quite comfortable with myself to be like, I can deal with these things on my own. And, like, maybe it is a struggle sometimes, but I enjoy that I always know I have my own back.
Yeah, I think your independence is a really wonderful quality that you possess. And I think also the way that I've seen you opening up to being dependent has been like a really great growth point for you as well. And starting to navigate what's the balance that I want to strike in my own life between dependence and independence.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about that in preparation for the podcast because I was going to say, kind of opposite to Violet, that I'm more secure in my friendships than I am with my relationships. And I think that's because I just had a lot of experience troubleshooting my friendships. I was very socially anxious coming into university. I didn't hold a lot of close relationships growing up. But when I got to university and I kind of found this problem of, like, I'm not connecting with anyone, I really want to be able to do that, I had so much time to be like, how do I function in this relationship? When do I reach out? and then was given these like really lovely opportunities by people like you and also my other friends that were just asking, like, how are you doing? Like, is everything okay? Like, I have a very specific memory. I don't know if you remember this. This was when we were just becoming friends. We were on the bus. I think I had mentioned to you that I was seeing someone, but I said it very passingly. And I remember you turning around to me on the bus when there was a bit of silence, and you're like, oh, how's insert name
so
here?
And so.
How's so-and-so? And I was like, oh, I remember being like kind of shocked of like, oh, like I have people that are going to ask me about this and people that care. And I think, you know, at the time, I don't think that relationship was going very well. So like it kind of gave me an outlet. And I think further down the line, I've started to realize that I can always depend on myself, but I can also go to other people. And I think I'm still working on that with my like intimate relationships. I think that's always going to be something that I struggle with a bit more. But even in the past few years, like I've seen small but like consistent progress, and it gives me a lot of hope for the future. And I think that it's not impossible to just address your problems and work on them.
And I think it's great to have some positive reinforcement where someone's maybe reaching out and asking you because they have the capacity to do so, and it might be harder for you to initiate that. And so just having that positive reinforcement of, oh, this person actually maybe is asking because they care and they want to know.
Yeah.
And maybe I can depend on them a little bit for some support here, and I'll try that out and I'll see how that feels. And if that feels nice, maybe I'll have the confidence to go to them next time.
Yeah.
And I think that's really great and like building blocks and just a great example of how you can have a non-secure attachment style and figure out a way to like conduct your life and your relationships that really works for you.
And I see it so often in so many of my friends. Like I've seen friends start to kind of understand their attachment, like if they're preoccupied and like they're getting a lot of anxiety, and then within months of just like knowing that about themselves and then being like, okay, well, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to go to my partner and I'm going to say, this is what I'm going to need. What do you need? Mm-hmm. And working on that. And I think that when people dedicate time in their relationships to do that type of communication, it doesn't matter what your attachment style is, because people know how you react. People can listen. Like I've had friends that notice that I'm pulling away a little bit or I haven't texted back in a little bit, and immediately I'm getting messages of like, hey, let's go and do this thing. Like it's not even pressuring me to talk about anything, but like I've started to really notice specifically in my close friendships that people care. Yeah. And I think that that's, as someone who was raised in a certain way, like that's really important for me because I'm learning day by day that there are people in my life that do care about me and want to see me doing well and would like to give me that support, which is what I think a lot of people who are not secure are really struggling with.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely challenging, but it's absolutely worth it. And I think you have to be patient with yourself. And there are people in your life who are willing to be patient with you and, you know, help you out and help you figure things out and do a bit of that trial and error work and see what feels good and right for you. And it may take time. And I would definitely stress that if you are aware of your attachment style and you do a bit of research into the best ways that you might want to communicate to a partner, a close friend, and maybe that ends up not feeling good or just doesn't really work for you, you know, it's totally okay. It's
so
going to take time. It's going to take practice. But I think there is hope out there.
Yeah.
And there are ways to feel more secure and happy in your relationships.
Yeah. Forgiving yourself, I think, is the biggest thing. I think that there's a lot of, at least from my personal experience, there's a lot of blame I've held for myself and my actions and my past relationships. And I think that's important. I think that it's okay to look at the way you've acted and be like, that didn't make me feel good. That didn't make someone else feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But you're human.
Yeah.
And also, this happened when you were literally 0 to 18 months. You had no control over this. And I think the biggest thing I would say to anyone kind of, you know, digging deep into their childhood or their past a little bit more is that you were a child. You were someone that just evolutionary-wise, was just looking to know how the world worked. And you were given the situation you were given, and that was not in your control, and you are the way you are because of that.
Yeah.
But you do have control over how you will be now.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. Like, for me, I have very good memories of times where I did confront a significant other, and I did text, and I said, hey, this didn't make me feel good.
Yeah.
Usually with Violet standing right next to me, I will add.
I do what I can.
So, but that feels good.
Yeah, and then, it's empowering.
And then people respond and they're like, yeah, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes they don't, and that's okay
too.
But at least you did it.
Yeah, you tried.
You tried.
Pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and outside of the patterns that are so deeply ingrained. And, you know, it should not be belittled that that is incredibly difficult. But I hope that some of what we've said today has been helpful.
If you're interested in discovering your own attachment style, we've got a great quiz for you to use. The link is personalityassessor.com/relationship wants. We'll also have this in our show description on the website this week, so feel free to find the link there. This was a test that one of my professors in my family studies course gave me. It showed me a lot of light. I really enjoyed taking it, and I send it to lots of people. And yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be your homework for this week. So maybe if you're feeling up to it, you know, be gentle with yourself.
Of course.
But if you are feeling up to it, maybe do some self-reflection and see what your results are. I think it could tell you a lot about yourself and your relationships. And we hope that that's a positive experience for you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Therapy Hour, because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it. We'll be back in 2 weeks at the same time, Tuesday at 6 p.m. And in 2 weeks, we'll be discussing jealousy. So you won't want to miss it. See you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.